now time for another edition of the Rebel Wives Live Podcast, presented by Rebels 247 of the 24/7 Sports Network. Complete coverage of Ole Miss athletics and recruiting news from the Rebels 247 staff, David Johnson, Michael Court, and Dave Bevin. Rebel Wives Live is also available free in the iTunes store. Now, here's your host, David Johnson.
To this edition of Rebel Rise Live. I'm your host today, Dave Bevin. Along with me is David Johnson, and we're going to start off today's podcast with talking about recruiting somewhere around 15 minutes after the start of this podcast. Michael Cork is expected to join us on the show to recap Ole Miss's loss yesterday to Alabama in the SEC tournament. But first off, we want to start things off with recruiting. Ole Miss is still in the thick of things right now with the 2016 class. There were a few misses on National Signing Day, but the Rebels have not given up. They are still looking for some critical need areas such as linebacker and on the defensive front. David, talk about some of these prospects, these targets that Ole Miss is still in it right now for in the 2016 cycle.
Well, I think as far as the linebackers go, they're done in the 2016 class with Oregon State transfer Rommel Montio and from Iowa Western, Dietrich Beings Dukes. I think that's all you're going to see as additions as far as linebackers go in the 2016 class. Now, they've got more scholarships left, obviously. As Freeze told us on National Signing Day, they could have signed 31, they signed 24. So that means seven were left out there. They've used two of them on the two linebackers, Maggio and Bean Dukes. From what I understand, they're only going to use two more of those seven, as they're setting some aside for any pending NCAA sanctions that involve scholarship reductions on the program. With that said, that leaves two more in this 2016 class that I'm expecting them to use before the end of May. I think their top two targets, both defensive linemen, Austin Robertson, as well as Josiah Coatney from Holmes, Mississippi Community College. Those are their two priorities. There are others that they are recruiting, but I think those are the two that they want to take, such as Kadir Shepherd, who was on campus last weekend for a visit. I think he probably would fit in around third, but again, they're taking two, is what I understand, and I think the two they want would be Austin Robertson as well as Josiah Coatney. And Coatney today is at South Carolina on an unofficial visit. Nothing to freak out about, this close to his home in Georgia, so he just drove over for a day. He'll take an official visit to South Carolina on March 19th, and he will also official Ole Miss on March 31st. He does have one official scheduled after the Ole Miss visit, which is April 9th, down in Gainesville to see the Florida Gators. Those are the only three officials that Coatney has scheduled at this point. He told me earlier this week he's got two dates in mind, either April 27th or May 4th, depending on how he can fit all of his visits in, as to when he will make an announcement and sign a letter of intent. Right now with Robertson, I think it's just kind of wide open. I don't have a good feel for him either way. Ole Miss is recruiting him heavily. With Coatney, I think it's going to boil down to Ole Miss and South Carolina. Remember, he is from Georgia, not very far from South Carolina, but he has spent the last year in Mississippi down at Holmes Community College. So that's kind of what you're looking at with this 16 class right now, Dave.
Okay. Now, a lot of questions have been on the board, David, about, you know, the playing time expected of these late 2016 cycle prospects? Hugh Freeze has mentioned in press conference that he expects Ramel Mayo and Bean Dukes, those two guys who have committed at linebacker, to potentially be impact players this fall. And David, you and I both have looked on the in spring practice, the defensive front. There are some injuries currently on the defensive front that they are still, you know, recovering from this spring. But for the most part, there is some still good quality depth there. And, you know, Kiffin has mentioned in the past that he'd like for his defensive front to be three to maybe even four guys deep. Signing some of these defensive prospects, potentially signing some of these defensive prospects like Coatney or Robertson, you know, how would you see these guys potentially seeing being an impact player this fall?
Well, as a general rule of thumb, you're not going to take a transfer or a junior college guy whom you don't have hope in of being an immediate impact player. That's generally why you're going to take a transfer. That's generally why you're going to take a junior college player. So with that being said, obviously the hope is that Rommel Maggio can come in and duplicate what he did at Oregon State last year, where he led the Beavers with 87 tackles. I'll tell you this, I have some connections up at Iowa Western Community College, and that coaching staff is sky high on Dietrich Beanstukes. They think that he is a guy that is about to explode onto the Power 5 scene. Remember, he signed with Georgia out of high school, and Georgia pretty at selecting their linebackers under Martin Rigg that would go on and have great careers. Things didn't work out at Georgia for him, so he headed up to Iowa Western, where he played last season. And just by some academic mishap, as he signed with Middle Tennessee State, Bean Dukes we're talking about here, and didn't get qualified, so he had to go back in the JUCO classroom, is on track to be qualified, will get out of school in May, and be in Oxford shortly afterwards. And, so you expect both of those guys to come in and be able to play and make an impact immediately. I think the same thing would be said with Josiah Coatney, maybe not so much for Robertson if you end up getting those two, simply because he's coming out of high school, but Coatney's 20 years old. Set out a year, then played a year of JUCO ball while he was getting his academics in order. So he's a full-grown man coming in here if you get Josiah Coatney. So, yeah, any of these guys that you're taking right now, you're expecting them to come in and make immediate and major impacts. That's why you go the JUCO route. That's why you take the post-grad transfer such as Maggio.
Looking ahead at the 2017 class, Ole Miss currently ranks 32nd nationally, 10th in the SEC in the 247 Sports composite rankings. Three commitments so far with D.D. Bowie out of Morton High School, four-star wide receiver out in Mississippi. Then you have Markel Winters, the junior college prospect out of Jones County, three-star prospect. And then you have the endless Ole Miss legacy record of Ben Brown, who is committed to Ole Miss out of Vicksburg, Mississippi, three-star prospect. A lot of talk on the board is there's concerns, you know, of how this class has started off. Ole Miss has some junior days in the coming months where they will have some 2017 prospects on campus. David, when do you expect, you know, to start seeing this 2017 class start to kick in gear? And who are some of those top targets right now that Ole Miss is really pushing for?
Well, I think, you know, some of the impatience amongst the fan base is because maybe you were a little spoiled in that 2016 class because you had so many early commitments. You go to four guys who kind of started this class off, and that being DeKalen Metcalf from Oxford, Justin Connor from North Panola, Eli Johnson from Lafayette, and Benito Jones from Wayne County. All of those guys, Mississippi products, three of them live within 15 minutes of the front door of Vaught-Hemingway Stadium. So you got off to a quicker start there. Metcalf committed as in between his 9th and 10th grade year. Justin Connor committed as a 10th grader. Eli committed as a 10th grader. So this class was started early because of those natural connections that you don't have as many of those in this class. You know, particularly right here in your own backyard when you're talking about Lafayette and Panola County. So that kind of, you know, that was kind of a unique situation with the 2016 class. The 17 class, if you look at it, you're off to a great start. You've already got two in-state commitments. Dede Bowie, as you mentioned, out of Morton, and Ben Brown out of St. Aloysius from Vicksburg. And then Markell Winters, who is originally from Florida but is at Jones County Junior College down in Ellisville right now. Those are your three that you have. You look at Bowie, and he's the number 11 wide receiver in the nation. So he fits that profile, that wide receiver type that Hugh Freeze has been recruiting in. Markell Winters, the number 2 JUCO defensive end in the country. Ben Brown, the number 55 offensive tackle in the nation, and as you mentioned, a legacy and an in-state guy, and in my opinion, certainly the top offensive lineman in the Magnolia State for the 2017 cycle. So I think it's off to a pretty good start. And it'll follow a more traditional path like most classes. You'll get a couple of more commitments that'll hop on board this spring, and then you'll get a swarm over summer camp season. And then you'll have your finish coming, you know, during the fall and leading on up to National Signing Day. Still hard to pinpoint a number on how many they're going to take in this class. I've heard as high as 24, as low as maybe 20. So that 20 to 24 range, probably what we're looking at with this 2017 class. It's going to be heavily flavored on the defensive side of the football. I can assure you of that. Quarterback, we believe they're going to take two. They'll take a high school guy and a JUCO guy. A JUCO guy to keep an eye on, just an interesting prospect here, Northwest Community College's Gardner Minshew. He is one that they're definitely going to watch and look at and monitor. Of course, Tristan Gebbia, he'll be making a spring decision. We think he's the top quarterback one on Ole Miss's board. Of course, he is a legacy. His father, Rich Gebbia, played tight end at Ole Miss in the late 1980s. Offensive line-wise, you know, you're probably talking 3, maybe 4 offensive linemen that they'll take in this class, and that 4th spot probably depends on the best available as to whether or not you want to use a Scully spot on it. They've already got Ben Brown in. Their top 2 tackle prospects are Trey Smith out of Jackson, Tennessee, and, of course, Walker Little out of Bel Air, Texas. Now, Little has an older brother and an older sister that are currently students at Ole Miss, so the family has a connection here. If you look at his crystal ball, most people have forecasted him to Texas. I'm not buying that right now. Right now you don't even know if Charlie Strong would ever coach him with the way the coaching situation is in Austin. Trey Smith, Ole Miss was his very first offer. I distinctly remember the day that they offered him. He was 14 years old. I picked him out of a line going into the Manning Center to register for camp, and I had a nice chat with him and his mom, and who has now passed away. Ole Miss ends up offering Trey that day after an outstanding camp performance, and you've seen he's just blown up. One of the few juniors in the nation invited to the opening last summer. I think the Rebels are sitting in a good spot for Trey Smith. They'll have to get in there and elbow it with Alabama and Tennessee for him, but I like where Ole Miss stands with Trey Smith and Walker Little both. So that would be 3 offensive linemen, counting your current commit, Ben Brown. Will they take a 4th? Again, I think it depends on who that 4th one is they can get, at what talent level that young man is at. And I think if it's the right person, it wouldn't matter if it's an inside guy or an outside guy, if it is the right one. Tight ends, we've heard that they were not going to take one in this class. I think that's changed just based by the offers that are being thrown out there. There are 4 offers to tight ends right now. Again, it's got to be the right one, and I think if it is, they will take another tight end in this class. It would not surprise me. Running back, an interesting situation, Dave, as you're looking at Ole Miss taking 1 or 2. And again, whether they take two or not probably depends on who that second one would be. Of course, their number one target is Cam Akers, the four-star prospect out of Mississippi. But you also have Ty Chandler, a legacy player at Montgomery Bell in Nashville. His father was Chico Chandler, played back for the Rebels in the Duke of Gallister era. So that's it on the offensive side of the football. That's kind of how that's shaken down. And as I mentioned, I expect this class to be heavily flavored on the defensive side, as many as three defensive tackles and three defensive ends. So that's six defensive linemen, possibly three or four linebackers in this class, a safety or two. I think they'll go heavy on the corners with two or three cornerbacks. So that's kind of setting the stage moving ahead right now.
Hey, Michael Cork has joined the show. Now, welcome to the show, Michael. Ole Miss last night was defeated by Alabama in the SEC tournament. Stephon Moody had an amazing showing.
Real quick, Dave, somebody's got terrible background noise going on. Some terrible background bleed noise coming through. If we could cut that out, whatever that is.
I'm in downtown Nashville at the moment, so I don't know how much say I would have in
it. It's kind of calmed down now. I don't hear as much background noise at the moment. But, Michael, last night Ole Miss was defeated by Alabama in the SEC tournament. Stephon Moody, couldn't have asked more out of him last night in an outstanding showing. 39 points. Correct me if I'm wrong, but I believe he was just about 3 points shy from tying an SEC tournament record in total points. He gets a standing ovation by a mixture of rival school crowds and even gets a hug from Avery Johnson, head coach at Alabama. You know, what was the experience night last night? Just, you know, go through with us of how everything just went down.
Yeah, Ole Miss got out to a strong start in the first. I believe they started out with an 8-0 run. And then Alabama just got they got a lot of open looks from three. Riley Norris was looking for his first three. And then I believe Edward to the three after that. And they were just making shots. Alabama shot the ball really well from three all night, shot 50% on the evening. And there really wasn't much. Avery Johnson told his team before the game, he said, listen, Stephon Moody's going to get at least 20 on us. He does it to everybody. We need to worry about stopping the rest of the guys. And that's what they did. Outside of Tomas Yellow, who had 11 points, no one else on the Ole Miss team was in double figures. Sebastian Saez was neutralized, 5 points and five rebounds. Perez and Newby, the other two starters, combined for just 4 points. There wasn't much presence off the bench. And so, you know, Ole Miss out-rebounded Alabama, and Alabama only had one less turnover than Ole Miss. And usually when Ole Miss is right in the same ballpark in turnovers and wins the rebounding battle, they win the game this year. That's just sort of been the tail of the tape. They win the rebounding battle, they win the game. And that just didn't happen last night, as there was no one else really that was a threat to score the basketball at any point in the game for Ole Miss. And something that was really telling was Alabama stole the ball six times from the Rebels, and they also blocked it 12 different times. Ole Miss didn't register a single steal or a single block on the night. And Stephon Moody had three. You felt like it was always trending in the direction of Alabama. Every time Ole Miss made a run, Alabama made a counter. But you still felt the way Stephon Moody was shooting the ball, the way he was willing the team, that there was still a possibility for a comeback. And he enters the final minute with two fouls. Alabama gets a deep outlet. Stephon Moody has a hard foul at the rim, so he has four. And Ole Miss was down, I believe, seven at the time with about 45 seconds left. And they get that outlet again. And sort of every one of us on the press row was saying, hey, Moody has four fouls. And Moody runs up, hacks the guy, and everyone in the arena recognized it, and you saw Kentucky fans, you saw Georgia fans, Mississippi State fans, even the Alabama fans that were heckling them earlier were all standing up in approval. And Stephon Moody was the only one in the arena who didn't know that he had four fouls. And it was sort of surreal to see. You don't expect that type of thing. And there was just so much appreciation for what he's done at Ole Miss and what he did during that game that everyone in the arena was standing up and applauding him. Avery Johnson wanted to shake his hand and give him a hug, which I don't know if I've ever seen another game where a player fouled out and got a hug from the opposing coach before he went off the court. And then you saw Rhett Nwabisihan was in the backcourt and made just a pointed effort to go up to Stephon Moody and give him some love there. So it was really cool to see that. And it really was a surreal experience seeing how they were treating Stephon Moody that once he fouled out.
All right, Michael, let me ask you this. And I'm not trying to be pointed here. Stephon Moody, was he the best player on the worst team? I mean, and obviously Ole Miss wasn't the worst team in the SEC, but, you know, some of that, and I've read stuff this morning about Moody deserved to go out better, things of that nature. I mean, obviously the rest of the league appreciates Stephon Moody. Well, some of that last night, the ovation from the Kentucky fans, even the Mississippi State fans in attendance, was some of that a pat on the back of maybe Stephon Moody deserves to still be playing some basketball this season?
Yeah, there's that old saying on playgrounds of game, respect, game, and that's the way a lot of players feel about Stephon Moody. But something that Avery Johnson said was, hey, Stephon Moody, I told him, you play the game the right way. And he really does. I mean, Stephon Moody, he doesn't leave anything on the floor. He's an assassin out there. And Stephon Moody played on the perfect team to showcase his abilities. But, I mean, Ole Miss did not lose that game for any sort of lack of effort. Especially the seniors were going hard during that game the entire night. Ole Miss just really didn't have the horses, really didn't have the depth or the talent or the size. And really, good coaches will pick that apart. Avery Johnson, he was two wins away from an NBA championship when he was at the Dallas Mavericks. And he knew how to coach that Alabama team after seeing Ole Miss once earlier in the year and losing that one. And, good teams or good coaches will pick that apart. Good teams will beat you that way. And so Stephon Moody, you know, he would certainly be a tremendous player on any team he plays for in the SEC or nationally. I'm sure that any coach would be happy to have a guy like Stephon Moody. But he played in a system that really showcased his skills as good as you can. Andy Kennedy has that single scoring guard showcase in the offense where he can get a high volume shooter like a Marshall Henderson, like a Chris Warren, Clay Sanders, Abernathy. You can get them a lot of shots and get them to score a lot. Stephon Moody he's going to be – I'd be surprised if he wasn't unanimous from the coaches in all-conference for how much respect each coach seems to have for Stephon Moody. It really is unfortunate that his 2 years playing for the Rebels netted zero wins in the SEC tournament and just one win in the NCAA tournament.
I guess the inevitable is, and by all probabilities, this season is over. Certainly not an NCAA berth awaiting Ole Miss, and probably not an NIT berth awaiting this Ole Miss team. It was the typical year for Ole Miss basketball that we've come to know under Andy Kennedy, a team that flirts right around the 20-win mark, a team that flirts as a potential NCAA team at various points of the season. And I guess where I'm going with this is, and I've seen where Ross Bjork is happy with where basketball is at Ole Miss, and there is a school of thought that you should be. If you take the long view, Andy Kennedy has had as much, if not more, success than any other program not named Kentucky in the SEC over the last decade. But is there a ceiling that has been reached with this program, even with the new pavilion, And if that is the case, is that okay at Ole Miss? Is it okay to be that perennial 20-win team that's really not going to ever make any major noise? Is that okay? And maybe that's an unfair question just 3 years removed from Andy Kennedy and the Rebels cutting the nets down in Nashville. But I think you've got a long enough history here that you can start making some assumptions about where the program is. And I'm not answering that for myself. I'm genuinely asking you that question. Where do things move from here?
Yeah, I you hear some they used to be shouts, but they've turned into some whispers about should Ole Miss look to replace Andy Kennedy. And, you know, so from my vantage point, the way I see it is Andy Kennedy didn't take over Kentucky. He didn't take over the University of Florida or Kansas or North Carolina, too. He took over Ole Miss. You can't find me an 18-year-old that knows who Ansu Cissé is. Either if he says he does, he's either lying or he's related to Ansu Cissé. And, you know, maybe he knows a Stephon Moody, maybe he knows a Marshall Henderson. But still, Ole Miss, you know, there's not exactly that high of a ceiling for a basketball program at Ole Miss. Certainly that gets raised with the pavilion. But, you know, with Andy Kennedy, the program has tried to schedule big-name teams, get them into the game with big-name opponents to get a high RPI win. And that there's just no return phone calls there. There aren't coaches banging down the door trying to play Ole Miss because they see sort of, you know, here's where their RPI typically is. Does this really help us win or lose? Which that's a chicken or the egg deal about, you know, Ole Miss's RPI would be higher if they were able to schedule these teams, but these teams won't schedule them because of the RPI. And of course, you know, the recruiting needs to pick up. The pavilion will help that. And maybe an assistant coach hired too would help that as far as relationships go with AAU coaches, which is really about all that recruiting has come to is shoe companies and what assistant coaches or head coaches know these AAU coaches. So I really think that it's far more likely that if Ole Miss parts with Andy Kennedy, who wins 20 games almost every year, has Ole Miss in the top third of the SEC every year, that it's far more likely that they descend back to the bottom of the conference rather than ascend to a perennial tournament team, a perennial Sweet 16 type of team. So, I mean, from talking with other coaches, there is a tremendous amount of respect for what Kennedy does, especially on the defensive end, where he's known to switch up the defenses quite a bit and give some headaches to other coaches. He gets a lot of respect from other coaches. I think that's far more likely that Kennedy can, you know, slowly build this team into a steadier NCAA tournament team than it is for Ole Miss to get some type of home run hire. Because there's no guy really out there that Ole Miss can go for that is going to come to Ole Miss who says, oh, you just fired your winningest coach in history who's been winning 20 games a year at that program. Do you want me to come in? What sort of job security do I have? So,
all right,
you know,
so
I see Kennedy,
that,
I see Kennedy
all
being...
All of that is fair enough. So, I mean, what is the answer? Should Ole Miss be happy with where their program is at and all the fine work that Andy Kennedy has done and not dream of advancing or raising that ceiling? Is that what you're saying, or should you just go, you know, we just got to wait? Just got to wait and see what happens and let this thing play out from beginning to end?
I'd say right now it's something to be happy with, and if there's something that goes above this, then that's just gravy. I mean, I can't think of – I'll have to do some research on this, but I can't think of another school that has – a football coach who's won a BCS or New Year's Six game, who has and appeared in multiple, who has a baseball coach who's won multiple games in Omaha, and has a basketball coach who's won multiple games in that NCAA tournament and done it all at that school. I can't think of someone who has, you know, that type of success across the line there. So I'd say you definitely have to be happy with it. And if you can get anything more, then that's just icing on top.
Okay. Well, I just think it was something that needed to be discussed because it's being discussed on message boards and whatnot, as it is perennially this time of the year. And, you know, you're probably exactly right. I just don't have I get both sides of the argument. I understand fans are itchy to want to compete for the highest level of championships every single year, but also understand the stark reality of it. And there's no way you can look at Andy Kennedy's body of work and be pleased with what he's done at Ole Miss over the course of the last decade. And at the same time, I understand the anxiousness of Ole Miss fans going, will it ever be any more than what it is? I get both sides of that argument. But, you know, Andy does have a new house to play in. And, you know, perhaps things, perhaps that'll give the program a slight little uptick that it needs to be a perennial NCAA tournament team, which I think is what everyone is kind of clamoring for. Guys, I'm going to have to go a little bit early today, so I'm going to leave the podcast to Dave and Michael to finish it out. And, of course, Michael, you can get us started. If Mother Nature cooperates, the Ole Miss baseball team will play 3 with Grambling this weekend. That's a mighty big if, looking at what the weatherman has to say. So I'll throw that to you. And I've got a choir obligation I've got to go to, so you guys can wrap it up. But from me to all of y'all, I hope you have a great weekend and hottie cotty.
Thanks, David. I agree that it does look like it's a big if when you're going on the weather forecast. I can see them trying to, you know, they'll look at the radar and try and adjust accordingly. They'll try and get they may try and get some type of deal where they could get 2 7-inning games in either Saturday or Sunday, may try and get that happen. I think it's more likely they get 2 games in than 3. Heck, maybe they even get 1 game in. It's not the end of the world if they can't get it in. This isn't an RPI win. Ole Miss really doesn't get anything out of it other than padding that win column. But, this is because I believe Grambling had the 6th worst GPA or RPI in college baseball last year. So, you know, they won't be in any big hurry to get this in. Talking to Mike Bianco about this weekend, he said, you know, this is just a time for us to really figure out if our lineup's going to be fluid going forward or if our lineup is sort of going to get set this weekend, because he's played around a lot. He's put Errol Robinson at the one spot for most of the year, but he's tried Will Golson there. You've seen Fitzsimmons get starts, Olenek get starts, Watson, DJ Miller, Nick Fortes. You've seen a lot of guys going into the lineup with the projected starters for the year. And so maybe it could be a nice time before conference play really gears up that you could figure all that stuff out. But I don't think Bianco is too terribly concerned with the weather this weekend.
Now, Michael, if Mother Nature does not hold out this weekend, looking at the weekend, how it may not impact them in you know, as far as the RPI goes, but will there be an impact as far as if they have to sit out the weekend? Because you look around the corner, you have a midweek series with UAB, who gave Ole Miss a challenge last year, and then you open up the SEC tournament traveling or the SEC conference play traveling to Knoxville this following weekend. You know, what will Ole Miss have to do to prepare quickly if they do have to sit out, you know, this weekend because of Mother Nature?
Yeah, of course. It certainly would not be ideal. Ole Miss really doesn't need to rest any arms this week, considering, you know, Pagnozzi went 4 innings but only threw 57 pitches, and he's a guy that you want in long relief. But, you know, there are really no arms that need resting. It's a relatively, knock on wood, relatively healthy team. Not even relatively, just completely healthy. So you think that there'd be, they'll try and get out there. and stay in rhythm, because when you're 12-1, you want to keep playing. You don't want to sit out and have any risk of putting out the fire. You want to keep that puppy burning. So they'll try and get out there, and if not, there'll be some indoor work. They're going to get some swings. They're going to throw. They're going to stretch. And so they'll try and do what they can to get prepared for Birmingham. And, you know, there's not going to be a lot of motivation that this team needs to knock off the Blazers after going 0-2 against them in Oxford a year ago. So they'll be geared up. It's just all a matter of trying to stay warm. And they'll do that indoors if need be, but they would much rather have some live competition that they could go against.
And, of course, if Mother Nature does hold out, the current schedule time for the Ole Miss series to kick off tonight in Oxford against Grambling State is scheduled. The first pitch is scheduled for 6:30 p.m., and then the two weekend series games, both scheduled Saturday, Sunday, and both are 1:30 p.m. Central Time. First pitch start. If anything changes, updates for the weather changes, we will let you know first on Rebels 247. All right, Michael, before we close out this podcast, talk about your trip outside of the Bridgestone Arena there in Nashville. You mentioned you're walking around in Nashville. What's the Music City like today?
Well, it's a little muggy, unfortunately. I believe we have the same type of weather that's in Oxford at the moment. A lot of Kentucky fans, a lot of blue, but, you know, that's to be expected considering that's about the only school that really goes all in on basketball. But, it's really confusing because I see Kentucky basketball fans, but then I'll see some Alabama hats, which I thought that Alabama football fans just immediately became Kentucky basketball fans once football ended. So I didn't even know Alabama basketball fans existed. This is really blowing my mind right now. It's very interesting. But there's, of course, a lot of gaudy orange out and about supporting their Vols who are making a heck of a run right now. But, you know, I love Nashville. A lot of good food. This is my kind of music. I'm big in the country. No, it's always a good time when you get up to the Music City. So I'm happy to be here. I'll be here for the weekend. I'm going to try and see some more basketball games before heading back to beautiful God's country.
Awesome. Well, Michael, I appreciate you joining on the show with us, and appreciate all of our listeners out there for listening to this edition of Rebel Rise Live. Once again, you can listen to the podcast free in the iTunes store. Well, that's going to do it for this edition of Rebel Rise Live. For Dave Bevan, Michael Cork, and David Johnson, hotty toddy, Rebel Nation.